Hello, it's Friday the 9th of April. I'm Andrew Pearce and this is the Andrew Pearce Show coming from the Daily Mail newsroom. Today, Buckingham Palace announced the sad news that Prince Philip had died at the age of 99. Duke of Edinburgh, who'd been hospitalised recently, had served the royal family for more than seven decades. The palace said in a statement, "It's with deep sorrow that Her Majesty the Queen announces the death of her beloved husband, His Royal Highness the Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh. His Royal Highness passed away peacefully this morning at Windsor Castle. The royal family joined with people around the world mourning his loss." I'm joined now by the Daily Mail's Robert Hardman. Robert, so sad, inevitable, but very sad. For the Queen, it's not just a significant member of the royal family that's died. It's her husband of 73 years and the head of her own family.
Absolutely, Andrew. All of us will feel our own sort of sadness, really, at the loss of someone who has been part of our lives. I mean, you've got to be of a very considerable age not to have seen the Duke at the heart of national and international life. But for the Queen herself, this is absolutely, this is the end of the longest royal marriage in history. This is the passing of the man who swore to be her liege man of life and limb and the man who she called her strength and stay. And I think that will be, that'll be his epitaph. He was the strength and stay of the longest lived queen in British history.
Do you think, just finally, Robert, we've got a wonderful tribute from you. Do you think we will see less of the Queen now, Robert? We always think about Queen Victoria, who disappeared from public life for many years after the death of her beloved Prince Albert. Will we see less of the Queen? Will Prince Charles now take on more, even more duties, do you think?
I think those are probably discussions for another day. I think everyone's just sort of adjusting to this, even though, at the age of 99, he's had a very full and long life. I still think this would have come something of a shock. Knowing the way that the Queen has operated all these years through thick and thin, I certainly would not expect her to emulate her great-great-grandmother. I think she is like the Duke himself. She's wedded to her duty, and that is not going to change.
That's Robert Hardman. Do read him in the Mail on Saturday's Daily Mail, because there will be a very, very long and detailed piece about the life and times of Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh. We now play a special audio tribute where the Mail's Robert Hardman indeed looks back on Prince Philip's extraordinary life, from his turbulent childhood to his tireless dedication to his public duties.
In the summer of 2017, Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, finally retired from official duties as he took the salute from the Royal Marines. A fitting tribute to a man who had himself served in the Royal Navy with distinction. Now, as the world celebrates his years of dedication to Queen and country, we look back on an extraordinary life.
Hi, Philip.
Take thee, Elizabeth Alexandra, Mary.
To my wedded wife.
To have and to hold.
To love and to cherish.
Till death us do part.
Philip's wedding to Princess Elizabeth in 1947 launched the 26-year-old naval lieutenant into the heart of the British establishment. It was a dramatic change from his turbulent early life. He was born Prince Philip of Greece and Denmark on the island of Corfu. But while still a baby, his family were forced into exile by a military coup. After his parents separated, he was sent away to school in Britain, where he excelled, before joining the Royal Navy at the outbreak of the Second World War. He earned a reputation as a brave and highly capable young officer. Come the end of the war, romance with Princess Elizabeth led to marriage. But after the King's death and Elizabeth's accession to the throne, the Duke's career had to be put aside. And from that moment, he dedicated his life to royal duty.
I, Philip, will become your liege man of life and limb.
To the young queen and to their family. And so began one of the greatest partnerships in British royal history.
He is someone who doesn't take easily to compliments, but he has quite simply been my strength and stay all these years. And I and his whole family, and this and many other countries, owe him a debt greater than he would ever claim, or we shall ever know.
He makes me laugh, and he's also someone who will tell me something that maybe I don't want to hear. And I'm glad, because the last thing I want is lots of, you know, people telling me what I want to hear. You know, I'd much rather hear what the reality of it is.
You admire his sort of bluntness?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
His was a life of action. He inspired millions of young people through his Duke of Edinburgh's award. He embraced science and was a pioneering champion of the environment.
Conservation isn't only to do with preserving bushes and animals. At the end of the whole of this cycle are people. Mm. If you threaten the life on a planet, you threaten all life on the planet. It's only a matter of time before it affects us seriously.
Fair to say,
Wesley,
a royal rebel.
No, not a rebel. No, I wouldn't call her. Innovator, perhaps.
As a husband, father, grandfather, and great-grandfather, and the longest-serving royal consort in history, Prince Philip devoted more than seven decades to the Queen and the country he loved.
What would you like to be your lasting legacy?
Would you go through life trying to make a legacy? I mean, life's going to go on after me. If I can make life marginally more tolerable for people who come afterwards, or even at the time, I'd be delighted. I mean, I didn't particularly want to create a legacy. I'd rather other people decided what legacy I'd left.
Tributes for the Prince poured in from all around the world. The Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, said this outside number 10 Downing Street.
Prince Philip earned the affection of generations here in the United Kingdom, across the Commonwealth, and around the world. He was the longest serving consort in history, one of the last surviving people in this country to have served in the Second World War. And from that conflict, he took an ethic of service that he applied throughout the unprecedented changes of the post-war era. Like the expert carriage driver that he was, he helped to steer the royal family and the monarchy so that it remains an institution indisputably vital to the balance and happiness of our national life.
The leader of the opposition, Sir Keir Starmer, also paid tribute, saying, "The United Kingdom has lost an extraordinary public servant in Prince Philip. However, he'll be remembered most of all for his extraordinary commitment and devotion to the Queen. For more than seven decades, he's been at her side. Their marriage has been a symbol of strength, stability and hope, even as the world around them changed, and most recently, during the pandemic." I'm joined now by Angela Levin, royal biographer. Angela, who's been observing the royal family for many years. Not unexpected, Angela. He was very sick. We saw when he left hospital to return to Windsor Castle. How significant will it be in terms of what happens next in the royal family? Because he wasn't just the Duke of Edinburgh and the Queen's husband. He was head of that family.
Yes, he was head of the family, and he did that to enable the Queen to fulfil her duty. And he began to do that when she was in her early 20s, when she became Queen. And it was very, very unusual for a woman to take the front position and him to walk sort of two steps behind her, especially for a man who's had such a brilliant career in the Navy and is a very proud and masculine man. And he did it with good grace, and he never complained, and he was always there for her. He was the only one, it is said, who treated her like an ordinary person. And if he didn't agree with something or felt something was going wrong, he had the confidence to tell her and argue it through in the nicest possible way. They were very much opposites. The young Princess Elizabeth was a very obedient child, and yet when she was 13 and met Prince Philip at an engagement that her parents were undertaking, she just fell in love with him, and she just refused to consider anyone else apart from him as someone to marry. They began to write a lot of letters to each other and gradually got closer while he was still in the Navy. And the interesting thing is that when his parents tried to find anyone else to marry her, she absolutely took a very strong stand. He was thought to be completely unsuitable because he came from a dysfunctional family. His father left the family for another woman, and his mother had mental health issues and was often in a hospital. And he had to go around from country to country, from place to place, just sort of sleeping a few days here and a few days there, until he went to Gordonston. And that sort of gave him the stability. And one reason why he was so insistent that Prince Charles went there, although he hated it. So he had also no money. And there were, of course, lots of people who wanted to marry the Queen, who were aristocratic, very wealthy, royals somewhere else, and she refused. And if you see the pictures of their wedding day, you can't help but notice the glow on both their faces. It's very touching. And he continued to support her, and although he could sometimes be rather rude and tactless, they got on fantastically well, as we all know. Very sad he didn't quite make the next three months.
I don't recall, Ange, if it was either her Diamond Jubilee speech or her Golden Jubilee, where she referred to him in many ways, but she also referred to him, and I thought it was a very interesting word she used, as her guide, because he was a wise counsel for her, and one wise counsel that never leaked.
Yes, she could trust him. It's very difficult for senior royals to trust anyone. Prince Harry said that to me. You don't know who wants to be nice to you because of what you are rather than who you are. Queen Elizabeth had the feeling that she could trust him 100%. He had very good qualities like duty and honour and doing the right thing. And they were very, very happy together. And when they were apart and they could then meet, like at Windsor, they enjoyed each other's company still. He was a very cultured man. He's written a few books. He loved to paint. He loved to read. And he could be quite self-sufficient. But when she was around, they just gelled together. They were meant to be together, and they just... it worked out tremendously well. And the Queen, of course, listened to him, because if he said things about the children, she might have disagreed. And this then was quite a woman's area. But she listened to him on his advice on how to deal with things in the modern world, really. He'll be greatly missed. And I think that looking back, one will see him even more as a pivotal role of how the royal family managed to move on, open up to modernity. He was very keen on making changes, and of course all the courtiers wanted nothing to do with him because he came from the wrong family and never listened. But he just carried on and made, you know, small changes along the way until he was accepted and appreciated. It's incredibly sad.
Very sad day. Angela Levin, royal biographer, talking about the death of the Duke of Edinburgh at 99. Behind the walls of Buckingham Palace and the other royal residences, Prince Philip was the one key figure the Queen could always turn to and trust. On her 50th wedding anniversary, the Queen said, "He's quite simply been my strength and my stay all these years." Prince Philip's charm and disinclination to suffer fools gladly earned him respect and affection among many people around the world. I'm joined now by Victoria Murphy, royal author and writer for Town and Country. Victoria, he hasn't quite got to 100 years, 99 years, the longest royal marriage in history, the man who has been the most stalwart consort that any monarch in British history could have hoped for.
I know, exactly, and it is an incredibly sad day, and I think particularly sad because I think, you know, people were quite hopeful when he was released from hospital not that long ago. He's bounced back so many times in his 90s, but this time it was just not, didn't quite go that way. And I think that, yes, I mean, you know, we see the tributes are pouring in from so many places now today, from the military, from the public, from so many of the organisations that Prince Philip was heavily involved with until very recently, until he retired aged 96. And I think, you know, that is reflective of the fact that he has really done, really did his duty to Queen and country. He knew when he married the Queen all those years ago that his life was going to be dictated by her position. And he absolutely committed to that and fulfilled on that responsibility that he knew that he had signed up for.
And a man who had to compromise too. I mean, he is the definitive alpha male. He was the alpha male long before the expression was ever part of our daily parlance. And of course, he accepted walking one step behind. But he always struggled at the beginning of the marriage with the revelation that his children would not be taking the name of their father, that they would be known as Windsor. And in the end, of course, there was a compromise some years later and they became Mountbatten-Windsor. But nevertheless, despite his grumbling and mumblings, he still got on with it because that was his duty.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And, you know, we see the legacy of the Mountbatten-Windsors that are alive today. We see Harry and Meghan's and Archie bears that surname. But yes, I mean, you know, he did have a very brief period where he was able to work in the military when he was still married to Princess Elizabeth, as she was then. And they lived in Malta, famously spending their time there. And she was able to have a life of a normal, relatively normal naval wife. But of course, that did not last for long because King George VI was in ailing health. And even before he actually died in 1952, Prince Philip had decided already to leave active service the summer before that. And that really set the tone that, you know, he was going to accept that even though he had this very promising military career in front of him, that actually his primary responsibility was to his wife and was to her job, and that was the way that it was going to be for their whole life. And he really delivered on that, and he really saw that through with the odd grumble, as you say. But I do think, you know, he's often spoken about for his gaffes. You know, we talk about the many comments, the witty comments, sometimes offensive comments that he's made on visits throughout the years, and lists are wheeled out very often. But I do think, you know, I hope that at the moment, at this time, people are really focusing on the incredible legacy that he left with the incredible work that he did. Britain's longest serving consort were unlikely ever to have anyone overtake that record in the future. And, you know, his place in the history books is very significant.
And just finally, there's an irony, isn't there, Victoria? We know that he didn't like a fuss. He didn't like a fuss made of him when he was sick. He didn't want people seeing him going in and out of hospital, being photographed. But because of COVID restrictions, it's almost certain that his funeral will, rather than being a grand state occasion or even semi-state occasion, will have to be scaled back and indeed may even be confined all to Windsor Castle.
Exactly. You know, we're waiting to hear exactly what the plans are, but the original plans clearly are not going to happen in the way that they had been intended. It was never going to be a state funeral. It was always going to be a much smaller scale. That was his wishes. A ceremonial funeral was planned, but not a big grand state funeral. But there were several events that were planned for the period between his death and a funeral. And there's lots of those things that I think will now have to be reviewed and won't be able to take place in the way that had originally been planned, and will be even more low-key than his original wishes had intended.
And just finally, we've had that statement from the Queen and Buckingham Palace today. Is it your understanding that will be it from the palace today, that there'll just be one statement? We may then hear from other members of the royal family in the 8 days ahead as the country goes into a period of national mourning.
Yes, I mean, they've said that there will be further statements in due course. And I think the original plans, there was actually intended to be sort of a large-scale briefing about what was happening in the day after an announcement was made. But it's not clear if that is still going to go ahead in the same way. I think with these kinds of things, we generally see the royal family work very much as one. So I wouldn't expect that we would see sort of multiple different announcements. I think things are very much going to be coordinated through the Queen and through her office and put out on behalf of the whole family, which we saw with this one announcement today. But I'm sure that we will get further updates because, of course, you know, everyone really does want to know what is the plan, how can we mourn this man, how can we be involved, what people want to know. You know, he's a very significant public figure.
All right, that's Victoria Murphy, the royal author. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, that's all we've got time for today on this very sad day. For the latest from the Daily Mail, why don't you download the Mail Plus app? Every weekday at 5 p.m, you can listen to me all over again. I'm Andrew Pearce. This is The Andrew Pearce Show. I'll be back on Monday. Have yourselves a good weekend and good night.